Bones are amazing things. They hold us up. They support us. They make us strong. But bones have other uses. In the past, bones were thrown by diviners, seeking out the mysteries of the future. Now the bones are cubes, made of plastic or resin. But they still reveal things to us as they fall from our fingers and rattle across the table. The story becomes clear. Welcome to Bone Throwers Theater, an RPG actual play podcast.
And welcome back to Bone Throwers Theater. My name is Jeremy, and we're playing our one-shot as our additional world build to our Wayfinders campaign upcoming. We're playing Reliquary.
Nope. I'm Jeff.
I'm Johnny. I'm playing Philani.
Oh, wait. My character has a name. Hey, Nim.
Nahum.
Nope, that's wrong. Nahum. That's my character.
I forgot to announce my character's name because we actually haven't played as these characters. They're just kind of.
Yeah, I
don't know why they had us build characters
in general.
In general.
Well, yeah.
I think this could be done without characters.
Yeah, this well, game.
I think the characters give you your. Prompt or whatever it's called.
Your prompt. Oh, yeah. So my character is Zenoa Poe.
Are we to be?
Yeah, I think we jumped all around. Yeah, so.
My name is Aaron, and I am playing Luthus Entrant.
Hi there. My name is Jordan, and I am playing Vanu'u, the Dinorea Scout.
I'm Ellie, playing Hokulani.
All right.
When we left off, we had discovered the group of people that were worshipping the Nauticult of the baby, and we discovered the relic of the bronzed baby booties.
Oh, Lord.
We kind of lost, we went off the rails a little bit.
Those words are in writing, and it is part of the world at this point. So, at this point, since we ran out of supplies, we need to return back to New Hikili. When we return to New Hikili, we need to answer a few questions.
Yes.
Two, to be precise. I'm just going to pick them. What are we putting at risk at New Hikili every time we leave?
Oh.
When we actually go from the planet to the rings to leave the planet, to leave the system, we don't realize this, but the blast site for the spaceships actually is digging closer and closer to a live warhead.
Ooh.
That is buried under the ground and has been buried for eons.
Eras. Periods.
Every time we take off,
yeah,
we're kind of pushing it towards a warhead.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a high risk.
I like that.
Yeah. I like that. Well, it just means that when we start playing the campaign, don't want to visit New Hikili.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What's the other question?
How do people in New Hikili react to the relics that we bring back?
What have we brought back so far?
The bronzed baby booties and the tablet with the inscription about the Dracones. Are they surprised to find that the child of our pontiff is being worshipped on another planet?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of what the bronzed baby booties are.
Yeah, that's what they represent. Yeah. I think
they're not a fan of the Nauticult.
Yeah.
No, I think they're surprised and would welcome the Nauticult.
I think they're insulted.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to be it sounds like they're trying to be a peaceful planet, and all these warmongers are focusing our attention on that. And I think that this attention of the Nauticult is going to even draw further attention to their situation.
Yeah, I think
not just the pontiff, but just the planet in general.
It's true. I think the pontiff wants to take the baby booties.
This is a very interesting piece of world building that may or may not play an important part.
Oh no, you wanted a very light, very fun campaign We are going to be carrying these baby booties as a campaign. Like, my character's only goal in life will be to acquire and keep these baby booties. Actually, I'm sure there's a set of six.
That actually makes sense. I just thought of something. Mm-hmm. What if there's six moons? Because that's how many times they have aligned and opened up the... And every time a new baby is born in 1,000 years, and opens up, a new moon is born.
Oh, I was just going to make a Marvel reference. Oh. Now we're traveling the stars trying to find the six baby booties of power.
That would be fun.
I think zoologists are very intrigued by Dracones.
Oh, yeah. I think this is a new and interesting...
Yeah, it's not very well known of species.
Only heard of in myth and legend.
Awesome. Those are our questions. So now we get to head back off into
space.
The wild blue yonder.
The final frontier. We need to
find our way.
Take us out into the black. Mm-hmm.
And I believe Ellie had the last pick.
Yes. So Jeremiah gets pick.
One left here.
So you're going to go for that one. It doesn't really talk about wagering and risking the relic die. So moving forward, do we want to include that in our risk that we could leave the relics back and we could say one relic and we could take that and leave these for the next. Is that cool with everybody?
Yeah, we're taking the baby booties with us.
Okay, we're going to take the baby booties instead. All right, so we have picked that one. How many dice on top of the baby booties do we want to wager? Risk.
Two.
Four.
Nine.
I want four.
Two.
That gives us three dice.
So a total of three.
Fine.
There it is.
There, I told you, the first one we got.
Tauheri's Nebula.
Which kind of is interesting. So the first one I flipped was the ace?
The first one you put out there.
Was the ace. All right, well.
Ace of Diamonds. So that is artificial landmarks.
All right, so we are headed to Tauheri's Nebula. Tauheri's Nebula is where the pirates of Tauheri were hiding, and it was kind of walled off. We weren't allowed to go there. Nobody was... Somebody discovered a way through the parallels into the nebula.
I think that was Kahola.
Kahola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Tauheri reveals himself to be the leader of the Shandatua and claims they are responsible for the destruction of planetary rings. He declares open season on any protected planet and publicly executes a Light Atua figurehead, X. Okay. When X is killed, his death creates a portal into the parallels. The Shandatua use that to escape. There's a hole left in the nebula that looks like a fish hook.
Awesome. So when we find an ace, aces are special. There's a couple things that happen with an ace. The first is that there's no roll of dice for an ace.
Okay.
With an ace, we automatically gain 2d6 into our dice pool. We also gain a relic, and we gain a specific revelation regarding the nature of our quest, which is to acquire the original text of the Wayfinders Treaty. So we need to define what this highly important artificial landmark is.
I'm thinking, obviously, it has to be some sort of massive space station.
This could actually be the original parallel station.
Yeah. I'm talking like massive
space almost station. Like a, it's no like, moon type of space station. Let's call it the hooked ring moon.
The hooked ring?
Because the rings look like they're spinning fish hooks.
An artificial ring around the space station.
Yes.
Of some sort of satellites.
So what if they pulled into a stationary position a rogue planet inside the nebula?
No, it's artificial.
But artificially keeping it there.
No, I like the fact that it's...
An artificial base.
Artificial humongous base.
Yeah.
Is it still the animistic...
Ooh.
Technology?
I am Unicron.
Yeah. Basically.
Yep.
Animistic space station.
Sentient space station.
It knows what it wants.
That's scary.
Awesome. Can I get a perspective?
From the engineer?
Yeah.
So the question that the engineer is going to answer is, what now disused function do you detect here?
Oh.
There seems to be some onboard Axillium refineries. Using technology that is unrecognizable.
Could the sentient space station be harvesting Axillium from the nebula?
It could be, but it appears to be like this is a disused function. It has not been, from our perspective, it has not been active in quite some time.
Gotcha.
All right, so we need to figure out another idea. So when we broke, we had said that when we found the ace, we would be calling it. You know, saying that's the game. Are we still wanting to do that since we turned over the ace right away? Or to go to get the second ace, we're probably going...
way down, yeah.
How about this? How about we go ahead and finish off this turn?
This location.
Yeah.
And then roll right into a commentary?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Okay, so what do we discover here that leads us to find the original text of the Treaty of Parallels?
The onboard computers have copies of the files, but they're
corrupted.
Yeah, they're corrupted. They're falsified in certain places where the shunned Atua did not agree. So it's like,
let's bring into play some of the animistic technology. Certain sections of the space station seem to be audibly speaking sections of this treaty.
Just like repeat on repeat.
Like a loop.
The space station actually believes it is the treaty.
Ooh, I like that. Does it believe that it's the whole treaty or just the section that it keeps repeating?
No, it believes it is the whole treaty.
Okay.
But it doesn't
realize. Oh, believes what it's repeating is the treaty.
No, it believes that it was built as a shrine to the treaty.
It is.
That it is the memorial.
The embodiment of the treaty.
Yes.
But because it hasn't been kept up, it's fallen apart. And
the joint's old.
Jankety.
Okay. That describes how we discovered that. The six of clubs.
Gosh, people.
Straight people. So who, Fafa, do we discover here?
Other travelers who have stumbled upon the same place that we have.
Like more colonists?
No, just more explorers, like us.
People want to be wayfinders?
Yeah, people wanting to bring back the way of the wayfinders.
So almost like we're not the only ones who are wanting to resurrect the wayfinders. Like there's a collective...
cult?
Not a cult.
No, it's individuals that have the same idea.
Yeah.
Okay, great minds think alike. It's not organized. It's very coincidental that we're meeting them here on the same search.
Pure coincidence. Wow. Can I get a perspective question on these people?
I'm going to go with, what unexplained forces do you sense here?
Ooh. What do you sense?
Presence that I haven't felt since.
I actually sense, even though it looks as though it's been unused and not working anymore, the Axillium, I sense it being refined deeper in the chip, but it doesn't make sense because all the refineries seem to be off. Also, it doesn't make sense because I can sense the Axillium.
Is that unusual?
Remember, I don't have the magic. I'm trying to use the Axillium to get magic. So that's unexplainable to me. Then I'm able to sense it.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it. And then we need the King of Spades. A significant hostile entity.
Yeah, because it is a sentient...
And if it believes that it's the embodiment of the treaty and we are trying to claim to be wayfinders...
it will try and enforce the treaty. Make us bend to its will.
Well, then the question is, what exactly is in the treaty that it's trying to enforce?
We don't know what's in the treaty.
We know part of what's in the treaty.
Only what it's repeating.
No, because we do know the nature of the treaty established the Order of the Wayfinders, and the Order of the Wayfinders, part of their stuff was to enforce international law, including restriction of trade of specific items. That's according to the microscope.
Which I have right here if you want to take a look at that.
With the adoption of the Treaty of Parallels, the Order of Wayfinders is established to enforce intergalactic and interdimensional laws, including outlawing the trafficking of Star Naya blood, which is high in the element Anuanua. Is the Anuanua the what we've dubbed Exilium?
No, they were different things.
No, yeah.
Okay.
They were? I'm not sure they were.
Oh, that may be the difference in the people who accepted the treaty versus and people. Didn't.
Is there, oh, yeah.
The Anuanua. Yeah.
Which I thought was the same element that was discovered in the rings by the Exilians.
Could be.
I thought those two were connected.
Scratch Exilium.
No, don't scratch it. I'd like it in there.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was renamed.
That the ones that were a part of the treaty were calling it Anuanua, and the ones that were not part of the treaty, maybe the Exilians were not on board with the treaty.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never defined who was part of the treaty and who wasn't.
We defined 5 of the 7 human Noct systems reject the Treaty of Parallels, citing grievances of various species among lower classes and limitations in scientific/technological advancement.
Well, we said 5 of 7 human Nocts did not accept it. We didn't say if there were anyone else that didn't accept it.
Correct.
So the Exilians could not have accepted it.
If they were weapons creators, they may not have.
Yes, exactly.
That could be very likely.
Because why take away your advantage?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, which why they are calling it Exilium.
Instead of Anuanua.
Yeah. Okay, and since we come from a planet that was a weapon manufacturer.
And we refer to it as Exilium.
And you probably have some Exilium on our ship.
The ship is identifying us as
hostiles because we have the Exilium.
Which also makes sense because the shunned Atua would not have been part of the treaty, which is why there was Exilium refineries on the ship.
I'm wondering if the shunned Atua didn't have anything to do with this, honestly. I'm thinking that somehow the space station was pulled into the nebula.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
That's true.
Maybe.
Well, if the station was actually made from one of the Star Naya.
Like, as a core, okay, but, like, we're talking about, like...
A huge...
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, like, the brain of the station is the brain of a...
Oh, that's a good idea. Is that
which brain... would be why I would be able to sense the...
You're sensing the Exilium.
The Exilium.
Yeah.
Or Anuanua.
Or Anuanua.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
Yep.
Sometimes it takes a little discussion and collaboration.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Perspective question for the King of Spades.
Yeah, we're supposed to roll before we do these, aren't we?
Oh, we need to decide how many dice we want to use for that.
Yeah, how many dice we want to use on the 6?
Well, if this is our last go-around, let's go ahead and make it a big one.
Yeah. So 3 for the 6 and 3 for the king?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? 7.
7.
All right, so that is a definite success.
And so whatever he said for his perspective is true.
Canon.
Yeah. I think that's a better way to do it.
Yeah.
Than the way the book has you do it.
Well, I got 3 4s. Last time I rolled, I got 2 4s.
So you've rolled nothing but 4s all night long.
Yeah.
So it is, your perspective is not canon, it is...
You would roll 4. Legend.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. What here has been impacted by your ancestors' actions?
That's a good question.
This is, you know, my whole thing is trying to figure out who my family history and who my people are. There is a palm reader on one of the panels that is shaped specifically for my species' hand.
Ooh.
Hmm.
Does it also tell you your zodiac?
When you said palm reader, that's where immediately where it went. Yeah. I was like, really?
Palm scanner. And when I place my hand on it, it activates a recognition software that allows me access into the computer system.
And the display comes up, enter query.
Yeah. And it recognizes my DNA. So somehow my ancestors were on this.
Yeah. Now, do you have any kind of genetic memory? No. Nope. So you do not have any kind of foreknowledge.
All I know is that my grandmother told me that her ancestors were brought to New Hakili as slaves.
Interesting. All right. So that pretty much wraps up what we wanted to do tonight, doesn't it?
Yeah, that wraps it up. We have discovered the original text of the Treaty of Parallels. We have not defined what that original text is. And I think that's because we can leave that up to the GM.
Wahahaha.
Rolling right into commentary. That's sort of what I think this game did a lot of. Gave Jordan some ideas.
Gave some hooks.
Yeah.
Some good ammunition.
Which we'll probably get more of when we play the fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
More of when we do our 3x3.
I have to be honest, I liked this game for what it was, but there was not enough role-playing to call it a role-playing game.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. We even commented on that. It's like, why do we even have character names?
Yeah.
Because I forgot I was playing a character and just not building.
You could have had a role assigned, like the scout role.
Yes.
Yeah. Or the doctor role or whatever you wanted to, and it would have not made a difference. I did not need a name for this character. I thought I did a decent job of like finding something within our own prior microscope history to add some flavor to it. Yeah. But
however, I do think some of the things came into play for your character. Like, I didn't use the what I lack and what I find, but the personal threat came into play when I explained something. And it was sort of hinted in some of the secret legend stuff and to some of the explanations. But I know Jeff's character and Johnny's character, some of their explanations and even Jordan's fit like, oh, this is that character. Yeah, and this is exactly why. So I think those did help some of the story creation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's no reason we actually needed a name.
Yeah, a name to invest in.
That speaks a lot to the strength of what we had done with Microscope, because we were able to actually pull ideas, like the card that I had written out. I had done that as like something specifically related to the parallels because I knew that was something that we had brought into the world.
Uh-huh.
So I think that having that, and then I had provided the name for the Dinorrhea homeworld in the text of the microscope. So when I pulled a Dinorrhea, I was very interested from the Dinorrhea from the very beginning. So when I had the chance to create a character, I'm like, oh, I'm going to pull this in. And then that was the first card that I flipped. And I was like, oh, well, this is a little bit of kismet.
Right.
But it could have used a lot more of a role-playing mechanic. Like, if it had something like Kingdom baked into it, I feel like it would have been a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I think this game by itself, if we had just not done Microscope and jumped into this, I think we would have kind of got halfway through it and been like, I don't know where we're going with this.
Yeah.
But I think Jordan hit it on the head saying, coming out of Microscope, we had a strong background to fall onto. And what I like about what this did for, I think, the world building, we talked about this a little bit at the end of Microscope, how we saw, generally, we were talking about just how events were impacting the entire galaxy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then we had that one scene and a couple explanations after where we saw how it is affecting actual life.
Individuals and
everyday life kind of things. Here, I think we start to get into how is it affecting different people of different species in different ways.
Yeah.
And what it was kind of goofy, but what it brought in is even in this entire galaxy, there is still this connection of entertainment culture and paparazzi culture and gossip thing is going on with Ellie's character.
That was a lot of fun.
Which is, you almost never see that in a sci-fi.
Yeah, a multi-planet sci-fi. There's no like interplanetary
fashion
or
pop culture kind of thing, but you kind of see that.
The closest you came was in Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the radio DJ and the opera.
And they tried a little in The Last Jedi with the casino world.
That was. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I joked about having a character trying to hunt down all these bronzed baby booties, but I do think that it could actually enter into the campaign, this idea of these people who are expecting the birth of this miracle child to change something. You know, I mean,
I think it could be kind of fun, as well as the... I'm pretty sure every character that I create that's interested in or invested in this is going to die a horrible death. But it could be really fun. So I agree. I kind of like the pop culture and the entertainment aspect.
You know, the funny thing is, just thinking about it, like with the animistic approach to technology, you could have a paparazzi obsessed spaceship.
Uh-huh. You could. Mm-hmm. Or a paparazzi that is made up of a fleet of spaceships.
That's terrifying. Chasing Brittany down with a fleet of spaceships.
You do see the pop culture thing through multiplanets on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You do.
Yes.
But that's not meant to be a serious.
Right. It tends to be pretty light. It tends to be...
Well, it's because pop culture is very light.
Yeah. I would say overall, though, as much fun as this system was, I think that, yes, we had to have had a pretty good jump start coming into it. And maybe, you know, it'd be interesting to play it without that and see...
Yeah, see how they play it by the book.
Yeah. See what comes out.
Also, our scope of the world that we are playing in was, I think, a lot broader than what was intended.
Yes.
Yes.
Intended for here. Because it sounded like it was supposed to be, oh, you were on this planet and there was this underground sort of society. That's what it sounded like as you're describing the coil, is like different layers of underground.
Underground society. So another option that it talks about is that it's like one big elevator shaft that you keep going deeper on, or a... It talks about even just like a big mega structure on Earth or on a planet that you are then exploring different regions of this mega structure, whatever that mega structure should be. And we really did a number on the rule set in general. It would be interesting to play it with the Vask, with the one city that it talks about, with the coil, that big mega structure, and see how differently it plays out.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be interesting to see. As clunky as it felt here, if we do it by the way it's written.
Yeah.
I like the card mechanics.
Of it. I do like that.
I think that we were ambitious trying to go for two.
Well, we tried to go for three.
Yeah. We tried to go for three.
And we didn't. We only got through one.
Like, they're saying a long game, and we've been doing this for several hours now, not counting our breaks for meals and stuff like that. So I don't want to know what a very long game. Yeah.
Well... Again, back to what we said, I think, at the end of Microscope, I think this group in particular, when it comes to, oh, you get to define something, we dive hard into details.
Yeah.
And we want to get every nuance and squeeze every bit of juice that we can out of our opportunity to tell part of the story that I think, like, I had even that question at the beginning. It's like, the final location. It's like, can we define details about this location, or are we just saying a name?
Right.
Because I think it's just ingrained into who we are as a playgroup that we want to infuse as many details as possible.
Well, I think as a group as well, we enjoy piggybacking off of all those details.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
That's our bread and butter as storytellers.
Yeah.
Is the details and piggybacking on each other's ideas to create more details.
So I think we probably tend to maybe dive deeper than what most writers intended for whatever aspect, whatever stage that we are doing in almost any game.
Yeah. And again, it's also designed for four players. We have six. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely felt the lack of being able to rotate through it easier.
Yeah. And it also talks about it's very much designed to be collaborative. But I think because we do this a lot, we create details a lot. Yeah. We didn't meet a lot of... So I don't know. What do you think? Like, we all...
There's a couple times we already did.
Mm-hmm. But not as each step of the way, where I feel like in the book, it's very much described as discuss this. And it's discuss this. And we're not just like... I get to create this deal, and we jump right in, and we start writing.
I wonder how this game would play as a convention game. I would imagine it being very difficult, and so it's having that discuss this thing in there because people are sitting down. They don't know each other very well, you know, and, you know, for a lot of people, they're not as lucky as we are to have a regular group that is into this kind of gaming. Uh-huh. So if you're going to try something new, it's going to be very risky.
Right.
And so
if you're doing this at a convention or a one shot at like a,
it could be a good like leading board into how to brainstorm together as a group and how to create those details.
But it's also a very big trust exercise.
It is.
Yes.
Well, and we've already done this several times with our microscope sessions too.
Right.
And it's sort of a similar kind of thing. Just microscope is more broad than bring in the details. This is more, okay, discuss the details.
Yeah.
Also, just to keep in mind what we are purposing this for is we are doing this as a setup to something that we're going to spend the next year and a half, 2 years playing in. Where, it, I mean, most people, I think, when they play this game, it's going to be, oh, we're going to play this once, and then whatever they created, it's done with.
Yeah.
So
cool thought experiment.
We are more invested into this, so I think that as well, some of the more thought that goes into when it's our turn will probably prolong the turn.
First thing you think of,
let me get this right because we're going to live with this for a while. Yeah. Or let me get this right and raise it well, or 2 months from now, Jordan's going to make this bite me in the butt.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know those space traveling dragons you guys created?
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Johnny. Oh, I definitely came up with this on purpose.
I will be honest, though. Everything that I suggested today was the first thing that came to mind.
Oh, I know. I know.
Well, you have nothing to fear.
I have a lot to fear.
You get to do whatever you want with it.
But it's not so much what the first thing that comes off your mind is. It's even when we're doing regular role-playing, first thing that comes to my mind most of the time is something really random and stupid joke that has nothing at all to do with the game.
And or if it does have to do with the game, it's...
It screws everything up if I actually do it.
It's
like badly.
I'm gonna break my leg.
Yes.
Another thing that I didn't get. So one rule piece that we just completely discarded. By we, I mean me. We're supposed to set up these time periods, and each location is supposed to be identified with a time period. But it doesn't play into anything outside of just table setup, and so. To me, it just didn't make sense to keep rolling with it.
Well, that probably made more sense if we hadn't already established time periods for where we're
right
for some of the places that we're already doing.
I think it would have made more sense for the way we were doing to be a physical map.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is easier to do in an underground tunnel than space.
Yes. Yeah. So instead, I do like the idea of how we set up a distance map. Uh-huh. We kind of have an idea where New Hakili is. In relation to other places.
Because it was like first come, first serve for the planets and the places that we visited.
Yeah.
You mean we're just not going to Abrams the whole campaign?
No, we're not.
What do you mean? It took us like Angel's Guard. How it took us 2 days to get across town?
I think the way I describe time is it takes a dramatically appropriate amount of time to travel from one point to another.
But that was something that we... We sort of complained about in Angel's Guard. It's like, man, we need to know how long it takes to get here. We need a map. We never had a map. Uh-huh. But then, Elements of War, we had a map. And that was very helpful.
It was.
That was very helpful. Now that we're doing space, it's going to be so hard to have a map of...
So one of the things that's interesting is that I'm thinking of pulling this from Star Wars. Like, they have, like, die codes for how long it takes you to travel from place to place. Yeah,
and the D6 system does.
Yeah, so I think that we'll probably be relying on that a little bit more.
There's also, like, a galaxy map in the Star Wars book, which I think we could model that.
All right, folks, any last words before we go ahead and call it a day?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to bring it back to character creation and role-playing. Okay. I know we didn't necessarily, you know, role-play like our usual setup where we interact with each other, but I've been sitting here thinking how sad I am, thinking I'm not going to be playing Hokulani for this campaign. But I know I had a fun time thinking that I wouldn't be playing this serious male role versus, like, this crazy... I don't know, sidekick to the adventure that's just going to be spreading possible rumors. I thought that it would have been a blast.
You were saying before we started recording that you were also thinking of playing a child.
I was thinking about playing a child. All the campaigns, not with just you guys, but I'm leading another campaign and playing another campaign soon that I've created another character for. I've always played serious male roles, except for like extra games that we play, like Fiasco or something. I always play eccentric characters.
Stulp.
And then I played a horrendous lady that went insane.
Oh yeah, that lady.
Oh, we didn't have names for those characters.
No, she was a southern woman. And killed her husband or something like that. I think for a long-term campaign, this made me really want to drive for that eccentric character for long-term. So
I think that the Wayfinders, to a certain degree, lend themselves to those who are outside of the normal box. People who are explorers, people who are on the fringes of society in one form or fashion.
Well, yeah, because they're nomads.
A more eccentric character might not necessarily be a bad fit for this game.
The way I like to think of it is for characters like that, I think for any campaign it's good to create, for any long-term campaign, it's good to create a character that has certain quirks.
Yes.
Where that will come into play, but that is not the only aspect to your character.
If you can't tell, I very much do that.
For one-shots, Fiasco, it's you can take that quirk, and that is your character, from start to finish, and that works beautifully. Like Leroy Jenkins.
I was going to say, that was what came to mind.
Yes. That was a quirk that was just the character. So, like that, when you're thinking of, I need to play a different kind of character, think of a quirk. Could be a ridiculous quirk. It could be an annoying quirk. Could be a serious quirk. It could be something that's just about your character that is like, that's special. That's you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that you say that, because I've had a couple characters in my notes on my phone for quite some time now. Because that's what Patrick and I do on road trips. We're like, what character you want to do next? I developed a child that I have like a Gilderoy Lockhart character. It's all fun and games, but I have a child character that I've been really wanting to play that in serious times, I try to help by giving you some information like, hey, did you know? I went to the library last week and I read a book.
Trying to be a stress reliever, but...
Yeah, but it's like just random facts that the child thought would help, but it just really doesn't. But then like think about the fact that possibly in the future, I get that fact right and just let the character arc of like, hey, I can help. Like, I don't know, just like little quirks like that.
Yes.
It makes
the character more realistic.
And thinking of a child that starts off silly, but then that huge character arc by the end where it's just like they've grown to...
Understand things.
Exactly. So that's one that's been hiding away in my phone that I really wanted to build off of. And that's just one of my little ones. So
I just had this random thought. You'll be the Wesley of our ship.
Shut up, Wesley.
Or the bear of the campaign.
Yeah, honestly.
Although, if you noticed, no one got annoyed with Bear.
Nope. No.
No one.
No.
Nobody. Everybody loved Bear.
I think he was the sunshine of the campaign.
Yes. Because he was innocent.
Normal. Wholesome.
Yeah.
Wholesome.
And it was such a dark world we were in.
But he was still helpful. He was needed.
So, leading into that, we got to start, the next step is start to think of what kind of characters.
I have no clue.
Because we will be creating.
We'll be creating characters next in our Fiasco, right?
Yep. So we have three or four things that we need to do to move forward. First off is create our Fiasco playset, which I would like to collaborate a little bit with you all on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Second of all, we need to write planetary write-ups. There's the D6 space has a system on how to write up planets.
Well, we have plenty of planets.
We have a lot of planets to work on. And then we also have, I want to create species character packages along the lines of what they have for Star Wars.
That's a good idea.
And then probably discussing what kind of like extra normal magical stuff we can do.
Yeah, we haven't discussed that at all. I mean, we've established that there is magic, but we haven't decided how much, how free it is, how deep it goes, what its limits are.
Right. You have to sacrifice a small child anytime you want to cast a spell.
A small child with, yes. That.
Okay, that's dark. We can't do that.
Wait, we've done some dark things.
This campaign's light, though.
What's light without dark?
Oh! There's going to be darkness in it, for sure, but...
Can't avoid having dark.
Hang on to that.
I kind of like that as a character theme.
As a quote?
Oh.
For somebody?
Yeah.
Ellie has the claims on that quote.
Yes. Yeah. That's excellent. As soon as you said it, I was like, dang, that's good.
That's so deep, man. All right. Our next recording session is for a fiasco. I'm really excited for fiasco because I think this is going to be a very different fiasco session than we've ever done before.
Uh-huh. It will be, yes.
I hope so.
You've done one fiasco with us,
right? I've done one, and it went places.
It was pretty tragic.
It went places.
Yeah. Blue sky.
Blue sky. The meth one.
Yep.
Selling meth out of the hot dog drive-thru place.
Yes.
All right, folks. We're going to go ahead and call this good. Thank you so much, Aaron, for taking over the player wrangling. Always fun to be to see a different person put their own spin on that particular aspect of the game.
Well, of course.
I think you killed Jeff and Jeremy, or I must have, because...
No, Jeremy did it. Queech.
Queech. God, Queech. That's going to come back and bite us in the ass.
Already has.
Bite us in the baby booties. Goodbye. Good night and good luck.
Thank you for listening to Bone Throwers Theater. Our cast is Aaron, Ellie, Jeff, Jeremy, Johnny, and Jordan. We are releasing this podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. That means you can share the podcast, but please do not modify it or try to gain financially from it. If you would like to visit our website, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater.com. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is bonethrowerstheater. You can also look us up on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And until next time, may the bones fall ever in your favor. This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.